Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to LA Talk. This is Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, and I am on the phone with my lovely, vivacious, super intelligent, wonderfully, never mind, we're not going to go there, Bobby Jean Bell.
And well-read. And you know what I thought? I kind of thought maybe you'd start tonight's show with something like raindrops keep falling on my head.
You know, I thought about it the last couple of weeks. But, you know, everybody seems to really like that embryonic journey as music. And I thought it's kind of like a really great lead-in to our show.
It is.
I'm going to just leave it there for a while until we can come up with something a little bit better. And then, of course, we'll always close with Paul Simon's Angie. And it's just two great instrumental pieces. Oh, a little real quick story about embryonic journey. I have a friend of mine who's just a 12-string picker, and the guy just is like phenomenal. His name is Rick Gilman, and we used to play a lot in the same stages in the Northwest. And he was up there one night, and he played embryonic journey, all 6.5 minutes of it, and and he finished. He got off the stage, and it was my turn to go up. And so I got up and sat on my stool. You know, you never follow guys like
how
Rick
can
Gilman.
You follow? Yeah.
Yeah. So I got on my stool, and I adjusted my mic, and I said, okay, I learned something new here tonight. I learned to add to my list of things never to do. I never will do hard drugs. I never will wear holy underwear. I never will piss off a rat, and I'm never, ever, ever again going to follow Rick Gilman.
Rules to live by.
Yep. And, you know, he still calls me occasionally. He doesn't call me, texts me occasionally and sends me emails and stuff. And just a tremendous guy. And I just couldn't get his personal life together. And it was really sad because the guy was a guitarist extraordinaire. So that being said, good evening, Bobby Jean.
Good evening, Jim. So good to be back with you this week.
Oh, I know. I'm loving this. I mean, being gone for like 4 months almost out of the chair. It's like home.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's like E.T. came home.
It's hard to believe October's around the corner, you know, between COVID and then what you went through and then COVID's still here. And we're looking at October, we're going, you know, into the cooler months and when we all get sick with the colds and flus and, you know, everything else.
In fact, I came out of here. I was in here working a little bit earlier. I was finishing up David's book and I was in here just futzing around. And I went out in the living room and I told Jerry, for those who don't know, Jerry is the bookie. She books our show. She is also Mrs. Christina. And she I said, you know, it's really cold in the studio. And she goes, and she's bundled up, right, in a blanket. Oh. And she goes, are you cold? So I pointed at her in her blanket. She goes, oh, well, I have vents around me. Well, I got one right next to me in the office. You know, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But, yes, it is getting colder outside. I'm getting up in the morning, and it's cold. And I can't smell the smoke so much now.
Oh.
That's a good.
Oh, okay.
And we could. And then they're warmed up with some fires over by Twin Falls and stuff. So. You know, oh, man, before we know it, Western states are going to be obliterated
until a storm comes in. And then we'll be praying for a storm. Right.
And water
put
breaks.
Out those fires.
Exactly. And you know, sandbags and things to keep the water from rushing into my basement. Yeah. there's no winning here. I mean, you just can't win. You know, they're either going to have to figure out this climate or move everybody to Mars. What the hell? I mean, good Lord. So we got a great show tonight. I talked to our guest on Tuesday, and we had quite the chat. He's just, I mean, he's got a really great sense of humor. And I swear it will come across in his time on the show. I don't know that he was bothered by the time spent on the radio with us. I think he was bothered more by the listener count.
I try not to think about it, except it's wonderful to have that many listeners. But if I thought about it, I wouldn't be able to do this.
No, and you know, the funny thing about it is that he's, I mean, he's from Ohio. His weather's getting cold now. I've been back this time of year. And he can't sit out in his backyard with a beer and a cigar anymore. He's got to go in the house and do it. And his wife will probably throw him out and say, get out of here with that stinky thing. Well, you know, let him tell you about himself, because the guy's really interesting. Please welcome to the writer's block, Mr. David Kettlehake.
Good evening, Jim and Bobby Jean. Thank you so much for being here. This is great. This is amazing. There's your,
hey, you know what? Why don't you give us a little bit of your self bio, and don't lie, because people will check it out.
Come on. Wow, that's harsh. Well, first of all, I did have one little thing. Wasn't there some other recommendation about not doing something in the wind? I don't know what it was, but if you're going to ask the things to do and not to do.
Yes, you know? You're right.
So, and also, you were talking about the fires. Well, we had the most gorgeous, unsettling orange moon here last night in Ohio.
Look.
So, yeah, I think what's happening out your way is still coming our way. So, best of luck to everybody.
You're getting the nasty stuff that's airborne.
Yeah, it was gorgeous, freaky, weird, but gorgeous. Anyway, again, thanks for having me on here. This is so much fun. You know, I have been reading and writing forever. I wrote a little short bio some time ago to update my website, and I put down that both my mom and my dad were in the social industries. My mom was a social worker. My dad was a Lutheran minister, which makes me a PK, which really opens up a whole different can of worms.
Explains a lot, David.
Yeah. We'll talk later. But, you know, it was really funny because, you know, we never had a lot of money. We were okay. We never had a lot of money, but there's one thing my mom always said: I will never say no to books. Mm-hmm. And she never did. I mean, it didn't matter if times were tight, if we didn't have hardly anything. If I said, hey, I'd like to go get a book, we would go get a book, and I always would. And then they'd catch me later that night reading it under my covers with a flashlight and tell me for the 14th time to go to bed, just go to bed. So, you know, that was the start of all this. And I had been writing for a long time. I mean, through elementary school, writing little, you know, short stories. I'd like to go back and find some. They're probably not very good, but it'd be interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, junior high, high school, even in college, I would charge my roommate $1 a page to take their papers and rewrite them, mm-hmm. and clean up the syntax and the grammar and everything else. And that was beer money for them, and they got a good paper, and everybody was happy. Mm-hmm. So that worked out great. My first book that I got out, I know we're going to talk about Gray tonight, but my first book I got out was Straw Man, and it was really kind of a labor of love. It was one of these things that I just said, you know, I just want to do this. I want to say, you know, put it in my bucket list or take it out of my bucket list or whatever. I want to have a book done. And I just, I had a good idea, I thought, and I put it down and I started writing. And I remember the first thing I thought was, I am never going to have enough material here to make a book. And then 150,000 words later, voila, it was done. And I really didn't do much with it. I mean, I finished it and I had it. And then for a present, my daughter had it bound and put it on Amazon through, you know, KDP, Kindle,
right,
Direct Publishing. Right. And I got a copy, and I still have that first edition. It was just a straight blue cover, and I'm holding this in my hand and I'm going, holy cow, this is a book, and I did this. And the most amazing thing was, it was on Amazon, and people started buying it. But
well,
hey,
you know what they say? You put it on Amazon, people will buy it. You can sell anything on Amazon, including my grandma, and she's been dead since 1969.
All right, I'm gonna look her up later. I'll look her up later. And it was really funny because then I had a couple other people say, "Hey, this is pretty good, but I think it needs edited because I didn't do any editing. I didn't know anything about that officially." So a friend of mine, who was a professor in Germany at the time, he was bored. It was winter. He would go back and forth, and I'd send him a chapter. He'd send it back marked up, and we just went through. And then it actually came out and got, you know, published back on KDP as the second edition. And and I hired a wonderful gentleman from Greece, believe it or not, to do my cover. He's actually done all three of my covers. Alex Saskalitis, great name. And it kind of went from there. And people would, you know, I see a lot of people. I'm in sales, and so I'd be out and about. And they'd go, "Hey, I got your book. That was really great." I'm like, "Huh, son of a gun. You know, somebody liked it. That's really cool."
Yeah,
so I said, "Well, let's write another one." Who'd have thunk it? Yeah, exactly. Who'd have thunk it? So did another one, and it was 165,000 words. So you know, I guess I didn't need to doubt myself on that. But, you know, from there, it just has kept going. I've got a couple of works of progress, and then Gray literally just was published, came out 3 days ago on September 21st.
Yes, and congratulations.
Yes, congrats. Congrats. It just showed up on Amazon, and I have to say that what a book.
Well, it's a little different from what I usually do.
Well, yeah, it's different from what we usually read.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. You know, I had so much fun with this because my first two were third person, past tense, standard James Patterson-esque type of stuff. You know, thriller, mystery, adventures, and whatnot. And I had a lot of fun with those, and they were great. And my daughter kept kind of bugging me to say, "Hey, you really need to write a young adult novel." She's a huge fan of young adult novels, and she's read them all. She has bookshelves and bookshelves and bookshelves of them. And I just didn't know what to do about that. And one day we were talking, and one more time, and she said, "You need to do that." And I said, "Okay." I was about 10,000 words into another Patterson-y book, and I said, "Okay, I got an idea. How about this?" And I kind of spewed out the plot for something I thought would go well. And I had a page written, and I read it to her, and she just said, "Oh my gosh, you have to write that." I went, "Oh, well, okay then." So she's actually in the foreword for this, the acknowledgement for my daughter, Nikki. Thanks for believing. Or making me believe, maybe I should have said. But that's where it started. And it, you know, a lot of times we talk about, I listen to your shows from said, you know, I have the first line and I have the last line, and then I try to fill in the middle.
That was Ed Willett.
Mm-hmm, that was Ed, yeah.
Okay. That was very interesting because I just kind of, I looked at the screen and I went, "Yes, that's me. That's me. That's what I do." But I really didn't do that with Gray too much because I had the beginning and all kind of fuzzy about down the road, you know, what's really going to happen because it's the first book of a trilogy.
Right.
And I know this one, Gray, obviously it's done. The next one's Black and the next one's going to be, was going to be White, was going to be the sequence of events. And I know what's not going to happen. I know there's not going to be any weird government secret lab. There's not going to be any aliens. There's not going to be any scientists working in a bunker. It's just not going to be like that.
Sure.
It's going to be totally different than that. Don't ask me what it's going to be. I'd like to say that I can't tell you because I'll spoil the secret or the surprise, but I'll be spoiling the surprise for all of us because I don't know what it is either. So
Scout's not going to wake up from a dream and realize, this was all just a vivid imagination. She fell asleep reading in bed with the flashlight and
She is not going to Bobby Ewing this thing and wake up from a dream. She's definitely not going to do that. You know, Scout was a really interesting character. She was fun to write. She actually came from a person that my wife and I met. We were in San Francisco back in, I think, 2014, I think it was. And we were staying at a hotel there near Ghirardelli Square. It was a really nice day. And we were on the second floor. And somebody outside was playing guitar. And they were really good. They were just playing guitar. And my wife looked at me and she said, I don't really like that. That's nice. So I went downstairs and I went out to the corner where they were playing. And I gave them some money. And I said, hey, my wife really likes your playing. Can you keep going? And they went, sure. So it was a girl and a guy, probably 20 years old, 22, somewhere right around there. And I just looked at him and I said, hey, you know what? And I flipped him a little more money. And I said, I'd like to buy your time for a little bit. I want to hear your story. Tell me about you. Is that okay? And the girl, she said, the guy was really shy, but the girl said, yeah, my name is Scout. And she looked like, she had kind of an elvish quality to it, kind of like almost Peter Pan-ish, sort of like, you know, Evangeline Lilly from, you know, Lost, or, you know, Ant-Man, or one of those. She had that kind of look about her in the face. But she had a really interesting story because she didn't consider herself homeless. They were travelers. They were not homeless. And they played for, you know, to earn money to buy food. And, you know, they just did this all up and down the West Coast. And they had been doing it for months. And I remember asking her one time, I said, you know, have you talked to your parents lately? She goes, well, no, I traded my phone for, I don't know, it was like magic beans or something, but a guitar. So I don't remember what it was exactly, but she didn't have her phone anymore. So I gave her my phone. I said, call your mom. And then she finished that call. I said, call your grandmother. And she called her grandmother. And that was kind of a nice bit, but that was how Scout came to be. It just, that's who I used as a model for this. And I would love to thank her, but I had no idea where she would ever be or anything else. But, and that's kind of why the nickname, the book goes along and uses nicknames most of the times instead of people. So you've got Hunter and Scout and Lord and Dog and Singer and all that stuff. That's kind of where that came from, was to start with Scout there in San Francisco. So
yeah, okay.
That was,
It makes perfect sense. We're going to take a real quick break here. You're listening to LA Talk Radio's Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina. And right now we're going to hear a word from LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Talk Radio. You're listening to LA Talk Radio's very own The Writer's Block, and I am your host, Jim Christina. And you know, in this time of COVID-19, when everybody is locked down and working from home, getting tired of that old terrestrial AM talk radio stuff and TV, how about this? How about you log on to LA Talk Radio? See, we've got some of the best talk, music, sports, self-help, and, you know, just about anything that your little heart desires, right here at LA Talk Radio. So why go any further? Why not just sit back and listen to what our hosts and our shows have to tell you? So that's LA Talk Radio, and it's found at latalkradio.com, and listen to The Writer's Block every Thursday night, 6 p.m., right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we are back. It is now 6:18 p.m. We are on the phone with our guest tonight, David Kettlehake, a writer of we read his new book for his trilogy called Gray. And oh my God, if you want to call and talk to David tonight, and I think if you are interested in dystopian youth novels, you may want to talk to this guy. The number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And again, write it down. This number is 323-203-0815. And it does work because Bobby Jean called in last week.
I did, and it worked.
It did work. Okay. You know what? I this is the first of three. And if they go the way this book has gone,
mm-hmm.
Oh my God! I mean, we're looking at like a short time. You know, I'm serious. This book really, I mean, it grabs you from the front, and holds you and throws you all over this dystopian world in the middle, and then it puts you out on shore in this battered city, with the young Scout walking down the road looking for her brother.
Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. It truly doesn't get any better than that. If you don't mind, I'm not going to ask you to read out of your book. I'm going to do it because this is a great this is a great passage. If you don't mind,
actually, go. No, by all means.
Please. This is the last This is the last paragraph of Gray. The hull scrapes bottom on the muddy concrete. I step out of the boat and easily pull it ashore, happy to leave it behind. I grab Hamlet and check to make sure Chuck is secure in his sheath on my thigh. I head up the muddy road, detouring around the dead, discolored of cars and vultures wheel effortlessly overhead, loving this new world. The smell of rot and death are here. And of course, my thing doesn't work right. In a physical presence that threatens to overwhelm my senses. I keep walking. Lord is out there somewhere, and hopefully answers are out there too. I'm the firebrand, and I'm going to find them. Oh, that just gave me goosebumps again. And you know, well, that word snuck up on me. The firebrand. Oh my God. But you know, when you look back at the things that she has gone through and what she has accomplished and what she has gathered, she is the firebrand.
Well, we learn in the very first, I don't know, page or two of the book that her responsibility is to keep the fire going for this little gathering of people around. And then they live in, you know, they're in a Motel 6 up on the 8th floor or something in the beginning. But it's her job to keep the fire going,
right,
which is not an easy task. David, why don't you tell us a little bit about the environment, a character in this book. Why don't you tell us about the environment and also just who are the Grays?
That's a great question. Thank you. So the environment is, I mean, from the back cover of the book, it just says the storm struck 5 years ago as a monstrous waterfall pounding the world. Entire cities vanished underwater. Lakes grew and merged into oceans. Glaciers shrank, mountains melted, and people changed. So there's a storm that comes up, and I go into a little detail in there. But again, these are kids. So they don't have a lot of money because these are kids that are less than 240 months old. And people always ask me, why do you quote time and months on this thing? Mm-hmm. And it's because years are too general. Because they know they're going to turn gray, which we'll get to that in a second, by the time they turn 240 months old, so they need to track their time better.
Right.
So they couldn't just say, I'm 18 and a half. That doesn't do it quite right. So they would say, I'm 185 months old. And that's one of the reasons they go for that in there. But the problem happens, so you've got this environment, which is horribly hostile, and the book is taking place in, for the most part, in Northwest Ohio, which is very, very flat. I mean, tabletop flat, because it used to be what was called the Great Black Swamp back in the 1800s until they drained it and gave it the best agricultural land, east of you guys. And so it's very, very flat. The only thing that is above water there, buildings and the occasional overpass and things like that. So the environment is really hostile. And it's still raining, not a lot, but it's still raining. So the flood's not going anywhere. But the problem is when somebody gets to be close to 240 months old, it could happen at 200, 210, somewhere right around there. They go gray, which means in the course of like 3 days, they actually, we're going to call it accelerated senility or dementia. They lose all sense of who they are over the course of a 3 day period until after that 3 days, they're really, I think I put in the book, no smarter than a 2 year old at that time. And the only thing they know is hunger because they don't have the intelligence to do or know anything else, but they're also very, very strong and they're very vicious and they're very unrelenting. So fortunately for Scout and the group, they don't like water. So they're pretty safe as long as they stay on water, which is one of the reasons the book started up there. But that's, again, why this is not going to be a solved thing, because anybody that's 240 months old or older is either dead or gray. Grays only last for like 30 days or so, and then they typically die too. So there's nobody out there. That's why I said there's no scientists. There's no government you know, group hidden in bunkers somewhere doing this, because they're all gone. So it's just kids. And the fact that they don't kind of go into a Lord of the Flies sort of thing all the time, I thought was pretty admirable of them. They wouldn't let me. I talked to them. They wouldn't let me. But they try to maintain some semblance of order in their small group. There's only, you know, 7 or 8 of them in this small group. But then the worst part is when somebody goes gray, they have to leave the group because they know within 2 or 3 days they're going to become nothing but a danger to the rest of the group. So they make them, it's called take a hike. They make them take a hike and they're gone. And so, you know, there's no repopulation, really. There's no help. There's nothing. So it's a little bleak.
You know, amazing what you the world, the dystopian world you have described. It is not only, I mean, flooded over. Everything is water, unless you can find a high spot. But also the water has become toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you can't get caught in it.
You can't, because think about everything. If you've ever had a flood in your basement,
right?
Well, I've had 3 or maybe 4. You know how bad just that much water is, couple inches of water in your basement. So you multiply that, so it's over the entire, basically, you know, low levels of the entire country and world. You've got cars with gasoline and gas tanks and chemical plants and drywall and everything that's just rotting and nasty. Every plastic bag that you got from Vons or Kroger's is floating in this thing. It is just foul. I mean, nothing lives in it. You can't touch it. You can't fish in it. So it's pretty bad. I'm really a pretty happy guy, by the way. I don't know.
I've noticed. You know, a question that keeps coming up, and to me, I don't know if Bobby Jean's thought of this. I'm sure she has, because she thinks of everything usually 10 minutes before I do, or 10 days before I do. Why a flood? I mean, why this particular storyline?
Well, one of the initial iterations of this that I didn't go with was that, because, and I don't think I could do the physics of this and figure this out, and I just don't think it would have been enough. Think about if there's 7 billion people in the world and there's 78% of the human body is water, and 6 billion of them die, and all of a sudden that extra water comes into the, you know, from the decaying bodies, goes back into the environment. What would that throw off everything? Mm-hmm. And that just sounded like it was getting too complicated. So the storm and the flood really, for me, just became another conflict that they had to overcome. Now, things will change in the next books, FYI. But, you know, and that's why I didn't start at the beginning either. I didn't start when Scout and her brother were in Cleveland, mm-hmm. and, you know, things started happening and their parents changing. I really wanted to jump in right in the middle of this, so the reader could get pulled in right away without having to go through an origin story per se. And it just seemed like a really good thing. I mean, it's not meant to be, I mean, it talks about, I couldn't find it in here if I had to, you know, it's not meant to be a biblical reference as much, even though it references that in the book periodically. And I know the brother's name, his nickname is Lord. There's a reason for that. But it's not meant to be, you know, that a spiritual book per se, because really Scout in here, any vestige of spiritualism that she may have is crushed and gone because of what she goes through.
Well, sure.
Now you fast forward to the half of the book, they end Ireland called home, which just happens to be a church. So am I talking myself right out of this?
Right.
But, except you that know, you call it the Hotel California when they're leaving it. So, yeah.
I do, because they can't get out.
Yeah.
You'll never leave.
Singer calls it that. Yeah. You can check it anytime you like, but you will never leave.
You can never leave.
So it does seem to have, you know, a bit of that biblical reference in it and spirituality, you know, references in it. But you know, I came from that kind of family. And even though that the book is not meant to go that way, the funny thing is the church in the book is actually my dad's last church.
Oh, wow.
Because it just fit it fit what I needed so well. So, you know, yeah.
Gotcha. Hey, we're gonna be taking another real quick break here. You're listening to LA Talk Radio's The Writer's Block. We're here every word from out west.
Readers want tonight's featured titles, Gray, Straw Man and Fever by David Kettlehake, or any books by the Writer's Block featured authors? Easy. Just go to outwestshop.com. Choose books and CDs from the toolbar, and then from the drop-down menu, click Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Then find the Writer's Block book list featuring titles of our guests. Click a book cover for the link to our interview and to purchase. Explore all our book categories. We add new titles daily. And why not listen to a podcast while you're browsing? One-stop shopping supports Out West and independent booksellers when you purchase books through this affiliate website. Remember, it's always a great day out west.
It is, and that was the sultry stylings of my co-host, Bobby Jean Bell. You're back with us in the studio. We've been on the phone with David Kettlehake, the author of the current book that's released only 3 days back, Gray, a first novel in a series of three. And Gray is both to Bobby Jean and I, one book that, even though it is listed as a YA novel, I don't know where he got that.
Yeah, because it's
definitely not a YA novel. It's definitely dystopian, but it's not. I don't think it's a young adult, but that's going to be up to the author. So if you want to call and talk to David, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And again, if you like dystopian books and you like YA and you like David Kettlehake, although I can't see why you wouldn't, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. Okay, David, we talked the other night and we had the most interesting conversation, Bobby. I really should have probably put you in on it, but nah. I Dave and I were chatting, and he said, you know, you say something on your show that really strikes home with me. And I what's that? And he goes, well, you say that the characters, you know, can direct the outcome of the book, and they direct the book, the storyline. I said, well, yeah, we say that often because that's what the authors tell us. And he goes, well, it's true with me too, at least to a degree. Can you remember exactly what it was that you said to me the other night, David?
Boy, that was a couple days ago. I'm lucky I remember where my car keys are.
And many beers back. Yeah, I get it. But
several beers back. So, well, I mean, we were talking about, you know, like I said, in many cases, I know where I'm going to start, and I know where I'm going to go near the end.
Right.
And then in the middle, that's where the characters kind of take over and kind of lead me around. Now, they in Gray, the problem was I liked all the characters. My daughter kept going, you need to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm. She's really sweet. I like her.
But she kept going, you need to kill somebody. So I had to pick somebody out.
Yeah,
that was bad. But they do. The characters have always done that to me when I get going on this. I mean, it doesn't matter which book I'm talking about in this case. They always have a voice in where this goes and what happens. And I just can't see it any other way. You've got writers that are plotters and you've got writers that are pantsers, writing by the seat of their pants. And I'm definitely a pantser, except they actually tell me what to do in so many cases.
Right.
You know, and that's just the way it is. And I don't know if that's the way it is with everybody, but man, they really did here. This one, there was no way that this was supposed to end up on that island with the church. That wasn't even in my mind in the beginning, but that's after they had that attack halfway through the book. It just kind of went that way. And it wasn't me doing it. It was them going, here, idiot, go over here. Go this way.
Can I make a comment about that, if I could?
Sure.
As a reader, because I, as y'all know, I'm not a writer, so I come to it all as a reader. I was grateful that you put us there, that there was some stability. They got some food. They were able to kind of reorganize. They were able to breathe a little bit. And it was still an unsettling situation for them, because now this ragtag group that has really banded together is thrust into another group that has been working very well together. But it was an interesting, for me, I felt like we'd sort of come onto an island and I could breathe also. And I could sort of relax a little bit, even though I knew interesting things would happen in this space. But up until that point, I mean, we are hungry. We are cold. We are running for our lives. We are fearful for our own futures, knowing what's in our futures. You know, it's very, very bleak. And I kept thinking as a reader, he's got to give us some hope. I mean, I have to have a glimmer of hope, because I like these characters, but you've drawn a situation that there's no, I mean, even if the sun comes out today, this world is not, it's not going to change overnight. And so I kept wondering, like, okay, where's the hope? Where's the hope? And you give us it in a couple other places, but it was kind of, as again, as a reader, I was grateful that you brought us there. And then their characters continue to develop there. I mean, there's other interesting things that go on.
Right.
But wanted to thank you for bringing us home there.
Oh, you're very welcome. I mean, these guys, right before they get to that place, they've been attacked. They've lost one of their people.
They're in boats.
They don't have there's no fire because in the battle it went out. They're laying in boats in the rain and they're trying to sleep. And it's just, could you imagine being more miserable?
I can't.
And they're hungry.
Yeah. And they've been hungry for 5 years mostly, you know.
And they've been hungry forever. Yeah, I mean, I remember at one point, somewhere in the beginning, the first couple of chapters, they're taking care of a couple of little kids and one little girl, Carly, who I just adore.
She's adorable.
I just think she's just the best. Scout says something about giving her some food, and she goes, she will never know the meaning of leftovers.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that was just like, oh, man, that's rough. That was rough. So I thought that taking them to what they call Church Island, because that's what Carly called it, but the residents call home, was a needed break. They needed to be able to breathe and to get something to eat and relax a little bit, because you just can't go on the way they were. You just can't.
Right.
I don't care who you are. So, yeah, thank you. That was intended to kind of let you sit back and go, whew, wow, that was rough.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So that was it. Now, you know, we're talking about going gray a little bit ago, and I always have to talk to people and say, grays are not zombies. Okay, it's not a zombie novel.
Right.
It's not a zombie apocalypse. It's not World War Z, even though it was really nice. Kirkus Reviews gave the book a nice review, and they said that, blah, blah, kind of like refrains from filling each chapter with gory scenes reminiscent of World War Z. And that's true. That was not my intention. I mean, really, the goriest one is, it's kind of gruesome. It's, you know, when Scout is at the warehouse, you know, that whole thing. I don't want to go into it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a little gruesome. But the rest of it's, you know, reasonably PG-13 plus.
Yeah,
plus
it's almost like psychological. I mean, they are living things that they are up against. But the way that you write it is almost like Alfred Hitchcock, black and white. We know something's going to happen. We don't really know exactly what is it. The music in the background, everything is setting us up. And there's, you know, horror and adrenaline running at the same time. It's like, you know, because you don't really, you give us enough that we understand what conflict will be like with these creatures.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you allow our imaginations to fill in the blanks.
Good. Thank you. Well, and to throw me in with the word Hitchcockian in there at all is a super compliment. So thank you.
Well, it's you know, sticking with the Hitchcockian is that it's almost like you spend the time setting up the right camera.
Yeah.
To give us the fear factor before you go into the scene.
That's it.
I love it. So, thank you so much. That's great. Thank you. I'm going to use that later, by the way.
It'll be recorded.
And you know, you only have to do it, you know, one, it's like we get it. We get it. So you don't have to hit us over the head with it every time. It's like, I know what's coming. Yeah. No.
You've made it easy to read through.
Yeah.
But still it keeps a definite sense, keeps you on your feet. That's for sure. Your toes. That's for sure. Cause you're never quite knowing what's around the next boatload.
Well, and that's it. I mean, that was the fun part, you know, still making things that go bump in the night a little bit.
Right.
Without having, you know, Jason Meyer come out with a, you know, wielding a huge knife and just slashing everybody. So,
well, it's when you bring in the wild ones, you know, Marlon Brando's motorcycle gang, and it turns out that lack of a better word, they're kind of pussies. And you know, towards the end, they allow a young lady that's got apparently a lot more strength than they do, rule the roost as she gets what she wants, and she sets down dictates. You know, what's going to happen, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's great.
I have one question about Scout. We know she loves books, and I love that she loves books. But why did she have Hamlet? Of all the books, and she reads the Harry Potter books. That's quite fun in the library. But how is it that Hamlet is the book she's carrying with her?
Is like of all the gin joints in all the world.
Like you are the creator, you are the author. Or did she say, I want Hamlet?
she did not. And it's really funny. I kind of go back and forth on that. And it's funny. I've got the book open at chapter one right here. And all it says is, I found a new book today. Sometimes I find books when we're out scrounging, but most of them are ruined beyond salvage. Little more than blocks of moldy, spongy pulp. The condition of this one is better, even though the leather cover is black and crusty and I can't make out the title. With patience and care, I'm able to tease a few stubborn pages apart with my tweezers, one by one, my hands trembling in anticipation. The pages separate grudgingly with a soft tearing sound, reluctant to reveal their printed secrets. Their words transport me away from this place, from this thing we call life. So for her, finding this book, it almost could have been a dictionary. Or a phone book. It was anything to get her away from
giving up
what she's living and what she's going through. And the fact that later on, that Singer knows this book very well, and they actually read it together, you know, takes it ever more closer to her at that point. So, yeah, she has to leave her other ones behind because she doesn't have room, but she's already read those. And so she takes this one along. For the longest time, she doesn't even know it's Hamlet because she can't read it because you know, the language is Old English.
Right, right.
And she's like, basically, what the hell is this? But it's still, when she gets with Singer and they read it together, then it becomes really and truly theirs / hers at that point.
Well, it does. It's finding that book. I took it. To me, it's what stopped her from giving up. It stopped her from saying to herself, "There's no use in even trying anymore."
Well, that and Singer, because really, when they're laying in the boat, that one time, she's about ready. She's had it, and you know, she almost has a breakdown, and he kind of helps her through that. But I wanted to have a really strong female protagonist in this, and she starts off not, but by the end, and I know she has things happen to her and whatnot, but by the end she's a different person. I mean, she's grown, and she is longer that meek little mild person that she was, you know, to begin with. And that's what I really liked about her. I just loved her. And what's really fun is I've been about 12,000 or so words into the sequel, or the second book of the trilogy, Black, and it might be darker. Sorry. But it starts, I know, the first paragraph, not out yet, but it just says, first line, my name is Scout and I'm a killer. So that's the first line of Black, because she knows what she is at that point. And it goes on a little bit, but she says, whatever the reason, I've become a killer. And it gives me no pride to say it, but I'm very good at it.
Well, should be. That's a great line.
That's a great
opening to a book, yeah.
Yeah, no, I love it.
Killer. Okay, that works. Yeah. Okay, one question in book number two before we ask you the question of the evening. And Bobby Jean, I believe it's your turn. But, okay, just give me a heads up. Does Singer make it?
Oh, he can't.
I can't tell you that.
I think Singer and Scout will start repopulating the world. I have to believe, but
is that our Adam and Eve? Singer,
but
and
I
Scout?
Don't know. He could surprise us.
I'm going to tell you guys that I went around and around with this, and actually my publisher and I got together on editing this a little bit, and Singer was actually more grievously wounded in my first version, and she made me lighten it up.
And I'm
really glad she did, because I have plans for all these people, and they're really not what you expect. I would hope. I think, maybe. But Jim, wink, wink. I can't tell you, wink, what's going to happen, if Singer's going to live or not, wink.
Well, we know Tiny and Carly have to be having a future too.
Well,
as the youngest,
yes.
The youngest,
wink,
youngest.
Wink, wink. We don't know, Bobby Jean.
I know we don't know. That's why we're eager for book two.
All right, ask a question. We're running out of time.
All righty. So this is the writer's block. Do you ever get it?
Okay.
If you do, what do you do about it? How do you get around it?
That's a great question. And I have. I mean, I've gotten to the point before where I've like. Not so much with Gray. Gray really wrote itself very, that was okay. With some prior ones, what I typically do if I get a writer's block, I go for a run. And it really, I put music on and I go for a run and I'm slow. I don't go as far as I used to, you know, but it really helps clear my head, and I really can think of things to do. But sometimes it's serendipity. I mean, one time in my first book, I had to kill a bad guy, and I wanted to do it really, really well. I mean, something that nobody would think about before, because he was, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger says in True Lies, but they were all bad, and he was really, really bad. And I was taking my son to the doctor, and the doctor's office where he normally goes is closed. We had to go to another branch of the same clinic 10 or 15 miles away. And I took him in there, and they took him in to see him. And I sat down, and there was a Scientific American sitting there right square in front of me on a table. And in it was a story about the cenotes, the caves of the Yucatan Peninsula, which is where my story was taking place. And I read that and I went, boom, I got it. And it was, so sometimes it's just, you don't know. Sometimes it's just serendipity. It's just going to hit you. But otherwise, you know, a good run will clear my head a lot of times and do that.
Well, we can know for sure the wind doesn't blow through your hair. Okay.
It blows through the hair everywhere but where I want it to.
I'm telling you. All righty. We're going to take another real quick break, and we'll be back with you. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina. And right now, we're going to hear a little word from Creative Edge. Okay.
When Creative Edge was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't going to be the same as other publicity firms. No, sir. You see, the folks at Creative Edge, they work closely with their individual clients, their needs, and their goals, pushing them harder and to get them noticed and get them booked. They believe communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is exactly how they have built their success. They work on the I can do that better, and they have indeed done just that. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals and needs. So Creative Edge is your brand. It's your future. Mickey Mickelson, publicist, and you can find them at creative-edge.services.
And we are back. It is now the Great Lane time in Los Angeles is 7:50 p.m. We are out of time, David. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
I have to say it's been a lot of fun.
And please, please, please contact the bookie about getting back on when your second book is ready.
Oh, I will absolutely.
Because I think Bobby Jean and I would love to discuss that book as well. And we get to find out if Singer made it.
Overjoyed.
Okay, well, we would love to have you back. Again, thank you so much for joining us. I know it's late where you are. Again, good old downtown.
Still time for
Ohio.
A cigar.
There you go. There you go. Again, thank you, David. Mr. David Kettlehake, and he's just a wonderful, wonderful guest this evening. And right now, we're going to announce that we have, coming in next week, Carrie Blaisdell. And she'll be with us, Bobby Jean and I. Yes. And next week is, wait a minute. Oh, that's right. Next week is the 29th, 30th. No, it's October 1st.
It's October 1st. Yes.
That's a Henry night as well. So we'll have
We'll
have Henry with us. We'll have Carrie Blaisdell. If we have near as much fun as we had tonight, it'll be a ball. So, for LA Talk Radio, the Writer's Block, I'm your host, Christina. And both of us, along with Russ Avison, say, we are out of here.